Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to African American Women in Politics with your host, Lena and Ebony. I'm Ebony.
I'm Lena.
And today we got an exciting show. We haven't been around, but we're back for 2015. And this topic that we're going to be discussing today is 2015, the year of the activist movement. You can look us up on Facebook. You can like us at African American Women in Politics, or you can find us on Twitter at AAWIP, and you can give us a call, 646-378-1443. What's up,
Leah? Hey, like you said, it's an exciting show. We're kicking off the year. We're going to be talking about 2015, the year of the activist movement. I mean, already, even at the end of last year, 2014, these activist movements started springing up all across the country, primarily spearheaded by the Ferguson movement.
Yeah, you know, with the verdict, you know, that came in, you know, with the no indictment, that's when, I swear, it was like within 24 hours, and ever since, all the way up until right now, it's just been nothing but movement, stuff that this country needed. This country really needed that because, you know, I was talking to, people, you know, the older people that were older that have marched, you know, and this is not our mother and father's civil rights movement. You know what I'm saying? This is our movement. This is for the 21st century. And frankly, this is something that needed to be done personally because, like I said, we've been too lax, and look what's going on, and especially within the criminal justice system with just all these, you know, all these cases. It's like I'm scared to even look in my news feed, look at the paper, turn on the TV, yet another, you know, unarmed black male or black woman or black child, because, you know, they've been killing the kids, too.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, over senseless crime, and then they're getting off. So, yeah, this is something we have to ring the alarm.
Agreed. You know, we are in one of the biggest social and racial justice movements that I think I've seen in my lifetime. And you and I are both are from the generation where we're just post-civil rights.
Correct.
So, you know, in our lifetime, I would say we're in one of the biggest social and racial justice movements. And we'll talk about that. The show will have kind of an undertone of that.
Right.
But, you know, first I'd like to start off with the youth engagement and the youth-led movement. I mean, I'm very, very proud of the youth-based movement. I'm very proud to see the youth being engaged.
Yeah.
As you know, those of us who are a little bit older and in our 30s and 40s, you know, we kind of held down the fort, and there wasn't that much youth engagement. But now, since Darren Wilson's acquittal in the murder of 18-year-old Michael Brown, you know, these youth-based movements spearheaded by the Black Lives Movement here in, actually across the nation.
Yes, we're talking about.
Yes, with the die-ins, and they're really getting organized. I just want to go on record by saying I'm very proud of these youth-based movements.
Yeah.
You know, and I really wish that some of the old heads, we call them, or the elders in the community, would really get behind and support our youth.
Yeah, I find it really sad and great sickening that some feel the need to bash. You know, that's where the generational gap comes from, you know, the youth bashing. And, oh, you guys don't do nothing. Oh, all you care about is hip-hop. When you're seeing, you know, youth in colleges with the die-ins and speaking out and the new protests where they're going into predominantly white spaces and reading, you know, the names of people that have been killed and then telling the stats about every 28 hours an unarmed black person is being murdered by the cops. I think that they need our support more than ever before. If not, I don't even know how to express it. I mean, I'm very proud of them. You know, when I was hearing that they were doing it here locally in high school, it was like, yes, our work is, you know, they're listening. And, you know, this is their fight. This is the fight of their lives. And they need our, you know, we need to have their back.
Well, you know, I agree, Ebony. And, you know, I was a little perturbed when Oprah Winfrey came out and said that, you know, this isn't your parents' civil rights movement. And, you know, it isn't. We're
That's
post
right.
civil rights.
That's right. It's not our parents' civil rights movement.
And neither should it be. you know, I think there's, like you said, there's this generational gap, but I think, you know, the older generation now, they fought the fight for civil rights, but now it's the youth's turn, so they need to pass the baton. They could be of a tremendous service with the knowledge that they have, right? So they need to be mentoring the youth. They also need to put the youth in contact with some of the media contacts as well, too.
Yes.
I mean, so there's, you know, I think the older activists kind of feel like, well, where's the place for us? Well, your place is still within these organizations, but it's just not in a leadership capacity.
No, I mean, the youth have to start somewhere. I mean, you can't just shut them out when they're the ones that's being murdered, for goodness sake. Not just murdered, just being racially profiled. I mean, I have a young adult, you know, son, and the countless stories, we don't have enough time, you know, for, you know, how they're being harassed. And just like in Ferguson, where the court system also is, you know, that's another form of harassment where, you know, with court fees, and knowing if they're poor, then they put them in jail and incarcerate them. And then this just sets up that, you know, dynamic. But getting back to what I'm saying with the youth, they need us, you know, they need us. And with the older activists, yeah, I understand. But see, they don't, that's where the disconnect comes from, because they don't, you know, people in our generation don't even know what they're listening to, instead of just, you know, turning a hair. You know, I know it's getting a little old, but you got to listen. I know, trust me. But you still have to listen to, you know, what's going on. You got to have some type of, you know, that's one thing I know with the youth is listening is really critical.
Well, I just wanted to put it out there so that those older activists and the leaders can make way for the next generation of leaders.
Yep.
And contrary to popular belief now, because we're in this post-civil rights era, you know, there's this misconception that there's one leader who's going to bring us into the promised land again.
Yeah.
And we all need to recognize that we're all leaders. So I just wanted to throw that out. But getting back to the youth engagement and youth-led movement, also I'm very proud of the youth in terms of organizing against better wages and cost of living wages. You know, they're also spearheading that. I mean, since we did the show last year, Ebony, there's been an additional 5 cities who enacted a higher minimum wage than the federal level, $9.50 minimum wage. So you've got Washington, D.C., you've got Seattle, Chicago just raised their minimum wage as well, too. I was shocked at this, but even some of the southern states, Oklahoma, raised their minimum wage above the federal level.
That's interesting for a red state.
Exactly. Iowa as well. So, you know, this youth-based movement is actually, it's gearing us and leading us, I think, into the right direction that this country needs to go in. Because Lord knows, you know, from a political standpoint, our elected officials, the two-party system, you know, they mirror each other. So I don't think that Congress is working for the people, and it isn't. But it's the people-based movement and the youth-based movement that are now driving it. And I'm so happy that this is finally happening. So I just want to encourage the youth. I kind of want to segue into the next talking point here. And I want to talk about one of the biggest social justice and racial justice movements, police brutality.
Right.
Again, you know, I'll talk about Ferguson for a moment with the murder of
Michael Brown.
Yeah, of Michael Brown, and how Darren Wilson was acquitted. But we all know that being African American or being Hispanic or being Native American, we've always been subjected to police brutality.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the NAACP and the Urban League were never effective in organizing around that. And that's why I'm so proud, and I want to give credit to the Black Lives Movement for organizing against police brutality.
Yes.
I also locally here want to give credit to a wonderful organization who's been doing this for 15 years, and that's Communities United Against Police Brutality.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they right now want to put it on the city charter. Minneapolis now is required to carry body cam.
Okay.
And hopefully the legislation will come about in St. Paul, where they're not only required to carry body cams, but that they're required to carry liability insurance.
Right.
So, yeah, in the event that they brutalize members of the community, you know, we have so many instances, and then you become uninsurable, and then you lose your job. So we want to weed out bad cops.
Right.
And they should be fired, period.
And that would send a message,
mm-hmm.
you know, definitely a message. Yeah, I just want to, you know, shout out to the Black Lives Matter, you know, movement that's been really going strong, you know, with this and putting police brutality into the forefront. And, you know, I, as you know, I was a part of the Black Lives Movement last month in December at the Mall of America. And when I went, it was a lot of intimidation that led Pryor up to that, thanks to the media. And so, you know, one thing about the Black Lives Matter, you know, the media is trying to, of course, black lives, people trying to, you know, discredit that. And I'm really proud that they're blocking that out and they're just sticking to the course.
You know, if you can, for members of the audience, kind of give a broader view or expand, if you will,
sure.
on that whole Black Lives action that took place at the Mall of America to combat police brutality. And the resistance that was met, because it was my understanding that there was over 3,000 protesters there. So it was very well organized and thought out. So I will turn it over to you.
Well, I can say, I was already at a community meeting with Welfare Rights earlier. And so, you know, I'm already hyped because I already knew it was coming up to it. So I already know this is the action. I have my little signs. But it was really shocking because I had my children with me, and that was where my children saw for the first time racism, and you know, front and center. Because my daughter was like, "Hey, they're checking," because they checked us, they searched us like you wouldn't believe, you know. And
you know, it was my understanding that, you know, as more people were coming in, groups of people, that they started blocking off entrances.
Oh yeah, well, I didn't come into the main entrance. See, me and my kids, we had a little plan, so we went to another entrance, but like you said, as lots of people were coming in, especially people of color, a.k.a. black folks, the Mall of America has had a history of profiling. Let's talk about that. And they've had a history of, you know, arresting youth, criminalizing our youth. I mean, I've watched it. I used to work, you know, at the mall, you know, certain place at the Mall of America. But they can't tell me, you know. That's
well, not to mention that the previous year with Idle No More, that
yep,
there were arrests as well with our Native American brothers and sisters.
And then totally intimidated, you know, trying to intimidate them as well. But, yeah, anyway, we went in, they searched us, and then my daughter was like, "Hey, Mom, they're not searching that white lady over there." And I looked, you know, I thought, you know, and it was true. They were just letting, you know, white people just go through. Like they were just good little, you know, families going to shopping. But they sure, you know, tried to search me, and then they didn't really search my kids too much, you know, because I was looking. And what another thing they did, they were getting black employees to do the search. See what I'm saying? See how the sneakiness was it? No.
Same thing that happened in Ferguson where they used the black officers for crowd control.
Right, right. So we came in. I saw one guy with a big Black Lives Matter. I said, "Hey, where the rotunda? Where the rally?" He said, "Like 6 minutes." And they were on time. I swear, as soon as it hit two, that's when the chanting was all over, all levels, even in the parking lot, on the outside. And, I mean, we were just like, wow, this is, you know, so we just got into it. They flashed us something on their screen saying that this protest is unauthorized and we will come to arrest you.
I saw that. You know, I want to give a shout-out to Sam Wagner with Radicalized Media News, because
mm-hmm.
he did, he live streamed it.
Right.
So those of us who weren't able to make it, we were able to see it.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it was so intimidating. You had this, it was a 60 inch screen TV that said, you know, this is unauthorized, you will be arrested. And then it was like this militarized police presence.
Let me tell you.
And it was just shocking.
It was. It scared my kids. Well, my boys, especially my youngest boy, started crying, trying to pull on me, "Please, Mom, because you know, Mom, don't go to jail." So, of course, when I look around, they had troopers and militarized police with batons doing this and this. And then some preachers from I don't know what church this was, you know, I wanted to thank them. They came around and just put their arms, like, over, you know, like, you know, with the kids, like, "No, you got to get the gloves to get, you know, to get them." And so You know what, Lena? It reminded me of Selma, Bloody Sunday. All those clips that we saw, you know, as you know, as youth coming up, it was a feeling because not only did we have the police, no presence, we listened to it. We just kept going. We just kept, you know, as they tried to resist, we resisted against them. We had people from that looked like soccer moms and, you know, suburbanites shouting at us. You know, shouting all kinds of, you know, I didn't hear any racial epithets, but I heard, you know, just curse words and just trying to discredit what we were doing.
Because, again, I think it's only fair that I give a little background. This protest happened on one of the biggest shopping days before Christmas, that Saturday before the Christmas holiday.
And that's where, you know, people were asking, weren't you scared when y'all there? You know, because there was a lot of cops. That was the most cops I've seen ever.
And, you know, they weren't all Bloomington police. You know, they shipped in from various cities across
the metro area. I saw
the
Minnesota
metro
state
area.
Troopers, and I'm like, why are the state troopers? Mm-hmm. Really? The sheriff? Really? And so I just, you know, people were, like, you know, hitting me on Facebook. Oh, no, you could have gone to steal this and that. That fear, Lena, was never in me.
Mm-hmm.
As it shouldn't be, because I'm using my First Amendment right, as we should. You know, this is something serious. So anyway, we left. Let me go on the record saying nobody kicked us out. The group, what they're pissed about is we said, "Oh, you gonna kick us out?" We shouted all the way.
And I saw that on the live stream.
3,000 people. It took a while to get to that, you know, entrance right by the transit center. You know, and so. We did a little chanting. I mean, it got, but after a while, the kids were like, this is fun, you know, because it was like a disobedience, this is fun, you know. So then we, you know, chanted and we did what we had to do and we vowed that not one dime should be, you know, and I want to go on the record to say again, not one dime, this is for anybody, but especially for Black Minnesotans, you know, we should not support the Mall of America.
Absolutely not. I will not step one foot in the Mall of America. They will not get one red cent from me.
Neither.
Nothing.
Yeah, I won't even send my kid. My kids already know. They say, Mom, if we go to the mall, you're not going to that one. You know, they already know the importance of that, and they've seen how they were treated less than. So they were really scared, though. I mean, it scared them, you know, with the police, of course.
Sure.
But they didn't kick us out. We left. They're the one that was on some arrogant kick and locked the door. They're the one. We didn't do anything. It was a peaceful protest, and that's what that made them so angry. So they let us out, and, you know, I'm hurrying to wrap it up, but they rushed. We went on our own, and what they're mad is that we occupied the space. Another thing they're mad about is, because, you know, they're mad about lost revenue. Oh, well. You know, I mean, I'm mad, you know, we're mad about police brutality.
Exactly.
You know, and the elitist attitude that the Mall of America had, the arrogance, and then trying to charge, you know, the activists.
Exactly. Which
is
just foolishness.
Foolishness. The same thing that they try to do to Idle No More.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, Mall of America's message basically is they're very hostile to people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand with the city council in Bloomington and all that, they want to uphold and maintain that white privilege. You understand? So that's why I just urge Black Minnesotans, especially, I don't know how, especially you, stay out that mall. Stay at that mall. Don't give them a dime.
Spend your money in your own community.
Yeah. But I will give credit to that cosmetic company that was there.
Lush?
Okay, yeah. Now, see them, I'll give credit to them because I was, like, kind of across the hall, but there was so much going on. But they came out and nobody told them to do this. The Mall of America even intimidated the employees, the workers, not to get involved. Let me put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're not talking about that. Instead, they're saying that they would lose their jobs. So that's job intimidation. They went, you know, they didn't have to do that. And all the employees came out and joined us. Oh, I'm sure that made them hot.
Well, you know, Ebony, you know, that kind of segues into our next talking point, which is racial justice, the conversation that America doesn't want to have.
Sure don't.
They don't want to talk about, and when I use they, I'm speaking solely about Caucasians and white privilege, upholding white supremacy, and I think it's long overdue, this conversation.
Very.
You know, but we're at a critical time now where I think across the country, you know, people are recognizing that there is a white privilege.
Oh, yeah.
Police officers do believe that they are above the law.
Yep.
And I think now with these racial justice movements, I think now is the time for us as people of color, and that's inclusive of Asians and Hispanics and African Americans and Native American brothers and sisters as well. But, you know, it's time for us to have not only the conversation, but it's time for these laws to change that have
yeah.
upheld white supremacy and white privilege and that have led to hiring biases, that have led to redlining and housing,
housing,
that have kept people of color from participating and building wealth
yeah,
for their community.
Right.
And so I just want to get your feelings about that conversation, and because white people tend to get really defensive,
yep.
even though they're in power. So go ahead. I'll put it up.
Yeah, because I've had to have that conversation, I mean, long drawn out online and in person. Well, one thing is, you know, I've had people ask me, you know, black, and a few people of color, you know, say, why do these things, why has it got to be Black Lives Matter? Why can't it be All Lives Matter?
Yes, I've heard that as well.
And I know I'm about to beat that dead horse, but just, let me just get to the audience. And I say, yes, all lives matter. However, the criminal justice system obviously doesn't feel the same way. So we're going to have to be a little more specific. You understand? And see, that's how I would have to, you know, really explain that to them. And, you know, and my mom, who's, I love her. You know, she, you know, had to help me in a conversation like that with a woman at the grocery store, for goodness sake, because they recognized me for the meeting, and then she asked me that. My mom jumped right in with it, you know, this is why. And this has been going on, and apparently you can't ignore that. And see, Black Lives, we will not be ignored.
And that's what I love about this new Black Lives youth-based
yes.
movement of primarily African-American women and female, and I love the fact that, you know, it's just spearheaded by African-American women who
yeah.
really don't get the credit that they deserve activists.
When,
you know, I think we all know that history suggests that, you know, we were the, you know, the organizers and leaders of dating back to civil rights, but we never got the credit. We were always
ignored.
Stay in the background.
Right. Right.
But when we talk about racial justice and the conversation America doesn't want to have, you know, we're talking about the depths of it. We're talking about how white supremacy and white privilege and even reparations for slavery, that they're still benefiting from slavery.
Yep.
They're still benefiting from, you know, there was a time when blacks weren't allowed to own property. There was a time when blacks weren't allowed to have certain education. They weren't allowed to be educated. You
right.
know, but now coming in, you know, to the 21st century, you know, it's just the privilege is still there.
I mean,
you look at, even in our state of Minnesota, you look at kind of the state legislature and the makeup of that. And there's one African-American female elected to the Minnesota state legislature. And in the Senate, there are two African-American men. And it speaks volumes, and not only that, but even, you know, our state is ranked, I think, one of the lowest states for equality for persons of color living here. You know, so it goes deeper than that. I mean, there we have a huge disparity in education and hiring biases. So this conversation of racial justice has to be not only had, but these laws have to be changed.
Oh, yeah, I was going to get into that. You know, just the next, you know, that should be the next step is, okay, are we going to address this and change the law?
Because make no bones about it, protests are wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to organize beyond the protest.
Oh, yeah.
The real protests start when you organize and you go up to the Capitol.
And you look it in their faces
mm-hmm.
of certain people.
You attend the congressional hearings,
right.
the Senate hearings, and the House hearings. That's when the real organizing comes.
Yep.
And I haven't yet seen that, but I know that with these youth-based movements, you know, they're relatively new. And that's where the older activists can come in and kind of mentor the youth and kind
exactly.
of exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
You know, like I said, racial justice definitely that should be the forefront of, you know, of the legislators, not just here in Minnesota, but nationwide. you know, because it's just past time. You know, it reminds me of when, like in 2009, when Eric Holder, the former Attorney General, when he said, and they got all in arms when he said, you know what, we're a nation of cowards, you know, like to discuss race. Oh, could it be true? That brother was spot on.
Mm-hmm.
That brother, I couldn't even, you know, emphasize how that is spot on, that this is something that doesn't want to happen. But see, you know what, when you don't have that conversation, when you don't do something about it, we end up with what we got right now.
Exactly. And, so, I mean, it's come to the point now where there isn't any amount of police, of a militarized police presence that's going to keep us from seeking action now.
Correct.
And, you know, I'm just so proud of the movements that are happening, but I will dance for joy once some of these racist laws are abolished.
Oh, yeah.
From the Constitution, and it's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of organizing. But I know you and I are up for the task, and
right.
It seems like these youth-based movements are up for the task
too.
I also want to kind of talk about the immigrants' rights, because, you know, they kind of fall in line with this too. I attended a protest from MIRAC, which is the Minnesota Immigrants' Rights Action Committee.
Okay.
And it was great. I mean, the premise of the protest was driver's license for all. Because Minnesota does have a large demographic of undocumented immigrants, and migrant farm workers and so on and so forth, and primarily the Hispanic community.
Okay.
So we protested at the state capitol. Our demands are very simple: driver's licenses for all. You know that in order to get to and from work here in the state of Minnesota, we have some light rail, but it simply isn't enough. And when you're withholding driver's license and people aren't able to get their driver's licenses, it prevents them from earning a living and income to support their family.
Oh, true.
So, you know, we marched around the Capitol, same as the Welfare Rights Committee did. We were passing out notices, driver's licenses for all. Representative Karen Clark came out, and they're introducing some legislation. This legislative session for driver's licenses for immigrants, but the immigrants' rights that's even going on around the country, you know, with undocumented workers. You know, here's the thing: you know, white America always wants the cheapest labor, and they want to benefit from that labor.
Yeah.
And then you know, when persons of color stand up for their human rights, their civil liberties, and their civil rights, you know, that's when the legislation to keep them down comes forth.
Right.
And it's seriously disgusting, but I hope that, you know, the other immigrant movements, and immigrants' rights has kind of the Hispanic faces attached to it.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's the African immigrants as well, too, and some of the other ethnic groups that are immigrants as well too, that deserve attention. So, well, you know, that's going to do it for our show today. I do want to thank the listening audience for listening today. African American Women in Politics will continue its weekly show, so we invite you to continue to listen to us. And again, we'd love to take your calls as well too. Thanks for listening.
Bye bye.